You're listening to Shit Shooting 101. I'm your host, Joshua Lee. Joining us today is astrotheologist, Bible decoder, and professional mind blower, author of the 6-book series Into the Rabbit Hole, Micah Denk. Hi, Micah. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man. And I'm led to believe that this is your first ever show.
This is my first ever interview. Correct.
Yes, that's fantastic. I'm very honored. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on the show to be my first ever interview.
I appreciate it.
First off, a simple, straightforward question. I'm certain you receive every podcast you go on, but what was it that brought you into this line of research of astrotheology?
Yes, I do get that quite a bit. So basically, I'm from Long Island, New York, and I had moved to Boston for a job in 2013. And when I got there, it wasn't a lot to do. I didn't really know many people. I mean, I have family in Boston, but I didn't really know many people. So there was a lot of just sitting around on the iPad, which just came out basically, and just going down rabbit holes on YouTube. And I came across this guy named Jordan Maxwell. I don't know if that name rings a bell for you.
I've watched quite a few of his YouTube.
Yes. So I came across one of his and it just blew my mind. I was raised religious and I never took to it, to be honest with you. Yeah, I always thought something was missing. And he basically filled in the blank for me. So then I kept watching, and it led me to another guy named Santos Bonocchi, who had been doing this for quite some time as well. And I had just fell down his rabbit hole, and I was blown away by all the information. It was like exactly the kind of information I was looking for. It like filled in all the blanks for me. It made everything make complete sense, and I studied them for like 6 months to a year. And then to the point where I was comfortable enough with the zodiac and everything that I started doing my own astrotheology work. And from time to time, I'd reach out to Santos and be like, this is what I'm working on. What do you think? And he'd send me encouraging words back. They're very accessible. And I just basically, yeah, from then I was like, I have to write about this. I have to make this a book. You know, I have an English degree. So I was like, I could write. I never wanted to be a writer, really. I just kind of fell into it. And I just basically started coming up with all this information. And I wrote a 6-book series, a bunch of thrillers, very Dan Brownish, very Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons type stuff, which explains astrotheology and the ones who are using this for nefarious purposes in the world. So I basically came up with a 6-book series, and it took me a few years to get an agent, but I finally did. And then it took me about a year and a half, 2 years to get a book deal, and I got a 6-book deal. My 4th book's coming out March 15th. My first 3 are out already. They're on Amazon. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Micah Denk. You can reach out to me, and if you want signed copies, I do that. And basically, that's pretty much it. I've been in the circuit since June. June 30th is when my first book came out. So it's been, what, 6-7 months now, and I've just been doing a ton of shows, just doing a lot of stuff. And now my publicist, we're currently having the first book turned into a script, and she's got some movie producers lined up, so that's where we're headed with this.
Awesome groovy stuff. So me, whenever I'm trying to talk about this kind of stuff with people, you know, when I'm talking with a neophyte or somebody who takes it more literally, and I try to explain the occultic encoding of the Bible, the astronomy, astrology, alchemy, numerology, cosmogony, those type of things, I get two kind of reactions. I either get the blank stare of the guy who thinks I'm a lunatic, or the person who just tuned me out from the beginning, because, you know, their literal interpretation is much simpler for them, and it's a familiar place. So my question to you is, when you're explaining this type of subject, what is your process in reeling in a stubbornly literal-minded Judeo-Christian follower into your perspective?
Well, you've got to understand a couple things. Number one, I'm at the point right now, I wouldn't say I'm 100% there, but I'm at the point right now where it's kind of baked into the cake, where people have heard about me and they know what I talk about. So at the very least, when people tune in, it's because they have an open mind, even if they're religious. Would they at least want to hear what I say? I also have to say, I've been on Richard Syrett, his podcast, and he's a devout Christian a bunch of times, and he's actually the one who got me on Coast to Coast, because he hosts that when George Norrie's not on. So he brought me on. He gave me a platform for that. And for that, what I do is I tell people, look, I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm not trying to change your mind on this. Believe me, I'm not trying to change your mind. You can believe what you want to believe. I'm just trying to give you a different way to look at it. Because the information that I talk about is not deniable. When you hear me speak of this kind of stuff, you see the connections. Whether or not you believe that it cancels out the fact that the Bible is divine, that's up to you. But there's some people who believe this as the truth, and there's some people who believe it as just another part of the story, and then you get the people who don't believe it at all. But I usually don't argue. I don't go head first. I'm never out there trying to convince somebody who has faith not to have it. I find that's the easiest way to get people to shut out. You know, you attract more bees with honey. Right? That's the saying, I think.
Right.
Did I get that right? Yeah, well, that's basically what it is. You attract more bees with honey. And that's pretty much I had two rules for myself. My publicist first told me when book one came out, she said, listen, stay away from politics, because you're going to alienate half of the country. It's a very difficult time right now. I don't know if it's going to get any better. You're going to alienate half the country and half your fan base. So that's one. And number two is, I don't attack religious people. I don't. There's people who talk astro theology that attack religious people. I have my own viewpoints. I believe that the Bible is an encoded astrology book and nothing more than that. I believe that most of the characters in the Bible never existed, that they're just stories. But I've been on plenty of religious podcasts before, too, where I could show them my information and they go, oh, I never thought of that. And to me, that's more important. You know, I'm not out there to change people's minds, so to speak. I'm just trying to, like, provide answers like I was provided back in the day when I had no answers.
Okay, so can you begin to walk us through, let's say, the Zodiac in the Bible and the connections in a way that you begin to convince people of the astrotheology?
Sure. There's some questions you can ask about the Bible. How Jesus was able to heal the blind, how he walked on water, how he turned water into wine, why he had 12 disciples, why he was betrayed with a kiss by Judas, why he was dead for 3 days, why his birthday's on December 25th. That last one is debatable. But basically, that's all astrotheology. And I'm going to go through the 12 signs, and then after I go through the 12 signs, we're going to revisit the questions, and you're going to see how they're all answered.
Okay,
so I start with Aquarius, even though the year starts in Aries. The first sign that I talk about is Aquarius, which is the man with the water pitcher. Then the second sign that I talk about is Pisces, which is the sign of the two fish in the water. Then Aries is the ram. In Aries, you have March 21st, which is the spring equinox. It's a 12-hour day, 12-hour night. It's also the Passover, or astrotheologically, the Jewish holiday, the Passover, is actually the passing over of the sun over the equator and back on its way to its height in the summer solstice. In Christianity, the passing over is changed and it becomes the resurrection of God's Son, or Easter. So you have the Passover and the resurrection. It's the same thing talking about the sun. And it's also why the Jews smear the lamb's blood on the door to protect them from God's wrath in Egypt. It's because they're the people of Aries, the ram. It's why they blow the ram's horn towards the sky. It's because the Jews are the people of Aries. Then the next sign is Taurus, the bull. And what you have to understand is, back in the day when they were coming up with this science, or when they were discovering this science, I should say, There were no clocks, there were no calendars, there were no watches, there was no iPads, there was none of that. All they had was basically sundials. They could look at the sun to see where it was in the day. Or basically, I mean, that was pretty much about it. You had to know when to plant. You had to know when to harvest. You had to know when winter was going to come. Just a bunch of different things that you had to know. So when you see Taurus, which is the bull, it's just as above, so below. You see the bull in the sky, you have to put the plow on the bull so that you can plow the field, so that you can plant the seeds, so that you can harvest in Virgo and Libra, which I'll get back to shortly. The next sign is Gemini, which is the twins. It's the story of Castor and Pollux Troy, whose sister was Helen of Troy. Incidentally, Castor and Pollux Troy are also the names of the brothers of Nicolas Cage and his brother in that movie from the 90s, Face Off. They were called Castor and Pollux Troy. John Travolta's character, who's called Sean Archer, the archer is Sagittarius with the bow and the arrow. They're opposing signs. So the elites and in Hollywood and everybody, they know about the astro theology. They sneak it in there. Then the next sign is Cancer the crab. It's the sideways moving creature. You have a crab shuffles from side to side. That's basically what the sun does in Cancer. So what happens is, starting on December 25th, the sun rises a degree every single day on its axis till it hits June 21st. And then for three consecutive days after that, it rises to the same degree, hence moving sideways. And then on June 25th, it lowers a degree, and it continues to lower a degree until it hits December 21st, which is the winter solstice, which is the lowest height that the sun rises. And then for three consecutive days, it does the same thing. That's why they said that God's son was dead for 3 days. It's because the sun rises at the lowest point for 3 days and then comes back to life December 25th. That's why all the gods in history, most of them or a lot of them, were born on December 25th. You can get Christians that can argue that his birthday was during the Feast of the Tabernacles, or it was in Aries, the beginning of the year, or it was in June. But the truth of the matter is that symbolically, it's represented in December 25th. That's why we have Christmas. Then Leo is the lion. The ruling planet of Leo is actually the sun. So metaphorically, when you're talking about the sun, you're talking about God's son being in his kingdom, in his glory, on his throne. They're talking about the sun in Leo. Then Virgo is the woman holding the wheat stalk. It's the virgin. So you remember when we said that we planted Taurus, right?
Right.
Right. So the virgins would basically cultivate the wheat in Virgo in order to make the bread. Then Libra is the justice. It's the scales, the balance. It's the just one. And the reason it's the justice is because it's an equinox. It's the fall equinox. It judges God's sun as it passes over the fall equinox and begins its final descent into winter, cold death. They talk about hell being hot. That's why it's a blazing inferno. But in Italian, the word is actually inverno for inferno, and inverno means winter. So hell is actually cold. When you're talking about people like Dante in the Divine Comedy, he goes to the bottom level of hell and he sees Satan in a frozen lake, because although it's hot down there, his wings are blowing so hard that it's freezing everything around him, and he's kind of half stuck in this lake of ice. Libra is also the wine season. So you plant grapes in Taurus, you plant the seeds in Taurus, and then you harvest in Libra. That's why in Virgo you get the bread, and in Libra you get the wine, the bread and the wine, which are the symbols of Christianity. Then Scorpio is the scorpion. He's the betrayer. So you remember before when we said how Judas betrays Jesus with a kiss?
Right.
Okay, the reason behind that is because in Scorpio, when a scorpion bites you, he's known as the betrayer. Because a scorpion bites you, it leaves an imprint in your skin that looks like a pair of lips. And that's the betrayal. It's also why the mafia has the kiss of death. And it's also why Judas betrayed Jesus with a kiss. It's because Judas represents Scorpio and Jesus represents the sun. So he's literally the son of God. He's the light of the world. So the sun is judged in Libra and betrayed in Scorpio. Then finally in Sagittarius, this is where the bow and the arrow shoot the sun and inflict further punishment on the sun. In the Bible, it's translated as a spear going to the side of God's son. I will show you that passage, how I know that the bow and the arrow translates into a spear. And then Capricorn is the goat. Because if the zodiac wheel, Capricorn's at the bottom of it, it starts to climb the mountain, going up 1 degree every day. So those are your 12 signs. Do you have any generic questions? I know this might be familiar to you, but I'm not sure about your listeners. Do you have any questions that you think they might ask?
Me personally, you were talking about the seasons, and I have this thought about why it's called fall and autumn. Uh-huh. It has two names for one season, but got on the old Googler contraption there, and it they don't know where the word autumn comes from. So I was thinking...
You're going to say it's coming from Atum?
Yeah. And yeah, Adam, A-D-A-M, the fall of man.
Yeah.
Am I on to something, or am I sounding like a buffoon here?
No, not at all. That sounds great. In fact, as soon as you said autumn, my mind immediately went to that, even though I never thought of it before. That's why I said that. Makes sense. Absolutely. But it goes further than that. Like, you're familiar with, like, Abraham and Sarah, right?
Right.
Well, Abraham in Hebrew is Abram. And if you take Abram, it's two words in Hebrew. That's Ab, which means Abba, which means father, and Ram, which means ram. So father Ram.
Oh, okay.
So the people of the ram. Also, Sarah is Sarah. And Abram, or Bram, Brahm and Sarah, Brahma and Saraswati. That's where the names come from. It goes back to Hindu.
Right. And also with the addition of the H, because earlier on, Brahma was spelled without an H, as well as Abram. You add the H to become Abraham.
Exactly.
Sarah also received the H on the end of her name.
Yep. Absolutely. Very good. So what do you think about the 12 signs? Should we go into some decodings?
You mean as far as examples?
Yeah.
That would be excellent.
Okay. So, were you raised religious?
Yeah, I was raised Methodist.
Okay. Talked to a good friend of mine who's also a Methodist, my friend Chrissy. She interviewed me. She was a Methodist, so... I'm going to ask some Catholic-based questions, too, so you may or may not know them.
Okay.
But you've read the Bible, or at least what you had to at school, right?
Right.
Are you familiar with the phrase, pride comes before the fall, or have you heard me speak about this?
Well, now that you mention it, I hear the word pride, and I'm thinking it probably has to do with Leo, right? Pride of lions?
Yes. Pride of lying. Okay, so can you define pride comes before the fall as a literal take or a religious take for your listeners?
Yeah, that phrase taken literally, you're just saying that somebody who is full of themselves is going to meet their own destruction.
That's perfect. Actually, I rarely hear them phrase it that eloquently in such a short sentence. Very well done.
I'll let me pat myself on the back here. Thank you.
No, really well done. Seriously, I'm going to have to remember that. So pride is a Leo. Is Leo lion? Lion is a group of lions called the pride. And Leo is in July and August. So the pride comes before the fall. That July, August comes before the fall. Comes right before the fall, actually. So you see how there's like one meaning that you can take and then it's a hidden meaning?
Right.
I'll give you another one. In the book of Micah, which is my namesake in the Old Testament, he predicts that the Savior is going to come from a specific town in Israel. Do you remember which one it was?
Bethlehem?
Exactly. Bethlehem. Now, how I divided up Abram into two Hebrew words, I'm going to do that here. Bethlehem is two Hebrew words. It's Bet, B-E-T, which means house. And Lechem, which literally means bread. So it's the house of bread, Well, I just told you that the House of Bread was Virgo, the ladies with the wheat stalk. Right. So you see how that could be a coded way of saying that the Savior will come from a virgin, right?
Okay, that makes sense.
So the hidden meanings. I mean, you can even go into the names for Jesus. I mean, you got Capricorn the goat. He's called the scapegoat of Israel. You've got the Aquarius, the sign of the man. He's known as the son of man. You've got Pisces, the two fish. He's known as the fisherman of men. Pisces is the two fish. Incidentally, the two fish is also why he was able to feed the masses with two fish. He fed the masses, he multiplied the two fish and five loaves of bread. The two fish is Pisces, the five loaves of bread are bread is Virgo. They're opposing signs, just like I was telling you about Nicolas Cage and John Travolta. See, the thing is that the most important sign that you'll find in decoding the Bible is they'll be talking about a neighboring sign, which is your sign to your left and your right of you, or your opposing sign. Like, for instance, what is your sun sign?
Aquarius.
You're an Aquarius, so your opposing sign is Leo. I'm a Libra. My opposing sign is Aries. So you count six signs after yours. That's the best way to describe it. Or you just look at a zodiac wheel and follow it directly across. He's the Lamb of God, or the Ram in Aries. Leo, he's known as the Lion of Judah. The lady holding the stalk of wheat in Virgo, right? He's born of a virgin, and he's called the Bread of Life. He's known as the Just One, or in Libra, that's the Scales of Justice. And it's also why he's worshipped on the Sun Day, because he is the sun. He's the Son of God. He's the light of the world. He's the one true Son.
As opposed to the Jews who worship the Sabbath on Saturn Day.
Exactly. The Jews go back to Saturn Day worship. Saturn is known as the black cube. Did you ever notice the black cube that the Jews wear on their forehead when they pray?
Right.
It's called a tefillin. You ever noticed how the Muslims walk around a giant black cube in Mecca?
Right, yeah.
It's the same thing. It's Saturn worship. You ever notice how Nintendo came out with the GameCube and it was a black cube?
Oh, I never thought about that.
It's the same thing.
Interesting.
What do you think so far?
It's all fascinating stuff. One thing that I find extremely interesting is Jesus as the sun god, and then the interpretations you can make of the cross. And I was wondering if you could delve into that and give us an overview there.
Sure. The cross is very simply one thing. You take a zodiac wheel, which everybody has seen, right? You've seen it. Can I just assume that everyone's seen it that listens here?
Yeah, I believe it's a
zodiac
wheel.
Everybody's seen a zodiac wheel once in their life. Well, what you do is the zodiac wheel, you have your four major points. You have December 21st, which is Capricorn, which is the bottom of the wheel. You have March 21st, which is Aries, which is the spring equinox. That's to your left. Then straight above the top of the wheel is Cancer, June 21st. And then to the right of the wheel, it's September 21st, which is the fall equinox. What you do is you connect these four together and it forms the cross. And that's the cross of God's Son that he lives and dies on.
And so when he's on the cross, they put a crown of thorns on him. I'm guessing the crown of thorns is representative of the corona of the sun?
Yes, it's the crown of thorns represents the sun's rays. The rays of the sun.
Okay, and you mentioned earlier the spear in the side of the sun. And
I'm going to get into that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I just wanted to decode a couple more passages.
Well, I have a question here about the cross.
Sure.
So we use it symbolically. We also use it as a sign for addition, or it can mean and, or it's the 20th letter. of the alphabet. So I'm wondering if there's a correlation there, symbolically.
Well, the alphabet is basically just like in Hebrew, it's called the alphabet. In Greek, it's called the alphabeta. It's the same thing. But as far as the cross for a T, there's no connection to that.
Okay.
There's no connection to that.
Okay, I'm sorry for interrupting your train of thought there. You wanted to give us some examples.
Yeah, so I'm going to read you one. Now, based on what I went over with the zodiac wheel, I'm not even going to decode this one because you're going to be able to see all the mentions in it. Okay? This is from Deuteronomy 32. It says, "He gave them honey from the cliffs and olive oil from the rocky ground. He gave his people butter from the herd and milk from the flock. He gave them lambs and goats. They had the best rams from Bashan and the finest wheat. They drank the best wine made from the juice of red grapes. But Jeshurun became fat and kicked like a bull." So you recognize all the symbology there?
There's a lot going on, but yeah, I recognize the goat, and then the I hear Aries and Taurus in there as well. Virgo was in there with the wheat.
Yep. Now let me give you a couple more that you might not know, but I'm going to teach you. He gave them honey from the cliffs. In the sign Cancer, there's what's called an asterism, which is a closely knit group of stars that they're not technically that close together, but from our vantage point, it is. It's called the beehive cluster. So that's where the honey comes from. Olive oil is also harvested in Libra. He gave people butter from the herd and milk from the flock. Those are milk based. That comes from the Milky Way galaxy, whose center is in Sagittarius. So you have Cancer that has the beehive honey, and then you have Sagittarius, which has the milk. So there's that little span of land right there through the zodiac is the land of milk and honey.
It's really interesting when you put it together that way. It makes it make sense. Something that is just so blurry and muddled when you try to interpret it literally, but then it just bring it shines a bright light on it. And fascinating stuff.
If I go into the New Testament, because we just did the Old Testament, Revelation 4:7, the first living creature was like a lion, that's Leo. The second was like an ox, well, that's Taurus. The third had a face like a man, well, that's Aquarius. And the fourth was like a flying eagle. In astrology, the flying eagle is the evolved form of the scorpion. The scorpion is the belly crawling creature. It's the lowest form of life on Earth. Its metaphysical evolved form is the flying eagle. So that would be Scorpio. So you have Leo, Taurus, Aquarius, and Scorpio in that one passage. Those are the four fixed signs of the zodiac. So they were not chosen by accident.
Okay, yeah, Revelations is one where they just throw the entire playbook at you when it comes to the symbolism. And I don't know how anybody who reads it literally is actually thinking that they're understanding it when it's just symbol after symbol after symbol.
Yeah, I mean, we can go to Revelation 12, which is only a couple passages later. I'm going to paraphrase. Well, a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on its heads. Its tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them to earth. So you have a great sign in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun. That's a metaphor for the sun being in Virgo. And if the sun's in Virgo, then the moon is directly under her feet, no?
Okay.
Then another sign appeared in heaven, a giant red dragon. There's a constellation called Draco. I don't know if you've ever heard of it,
Yeah,
but
I'm
it's a
not familiar
dragon.
with it, but I've heard it.
It's the dragon. And its tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky. Well, the tail of Draco goes from Aries to Sagittarius, which is a third of the zodiac.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So you had asked before about the spear, right?
Right.
Let me give you a longer passage. This is from the book of Job. Do you remember the story of Job?
If I remember it correctly, Job was a very pious man, and God rewarded him for being so pious, but then he kind of made a deal, some sort of bet with the devil that the devil's like, if you stop rewarding him, he's going to stop being so faithful to you. But so Job suffered, and but he still remained faithful.
And then he got everything multiplied to him tenfold, or however many fold it said it was. Yes. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read to you God's answer to Job. You remember when God finally answers Job? Like Job's crying out to the sky, and then God finally answers him?
I don't remember what was said there.
I'm going to read it to you. But that's basically what happened. So Job 38:32, he says, God says, can you lead forth the Maseroth? And the Maseroth literally means the zodiac. I don't know if you knew that,
I did
but the
not.
Maseroth literally means the zodiac. Over time, it becomes the word Mazalot, which survives in Judaism today as Mazel Tov. And Mazel Tov literally means good fortune from the stars.
Oh, okay.
So, what is the Lord's challenge to Job then? He says the first two sentences are very blatantly obvious, like astrology. He says, can you bind the chains of the Pleiades? Can you loosen Orion's belt? Those are obvious, right? Those are right there.
Right.
Then he says, can you bring forth the constellation in their seasons, or lead out the bear with its cubs? The constellation or the zodiac above, and the bear and its cubs are Ursa Major, the Great Bear, and Ursa Minor, part of the Big Dipper. And he says, who can tip over the water jars of the heavens? That's Aquarius. Do you hunt for the prey for the lioness and satisfy the hunger of the lions? That's Leo. Who provides food for the raven? That's the constellation Corvus, which means raven and borders on Virgo. Do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Mriga, meaning deer, is located in Orion. Who let the wild donkey go free? That's Acellus Borealis, which means donkey, and is located in Cancer. Will the wild ox consent to serve you? That's Taurus. The wings of the ostrich flap joyfully. That's Lambda Aquilae or Alpha Liman, which means two ostriches in Arabic. Do you give the horse its strength? It laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. It does not shy away from the sword. The quiver rattles against its side, along with the flashing spear and lance. Sagittarius, with the bow and the arrow. But you see how it's called the spear, right?
Right.
Does the eagle soar at your command and build its nest on high? That's Aquila, which is the Latin name for eagle and is a constellation a few degrees above the celestial equator. And he finally says, can you pull a Leviathan with a fish hook? And that's the great fish Pisces. So you see how God's challenge to him is just basically, do you know all these stars? Do you know all these stars?
Right. It's just an astrological lesson.
The whole Bible is an astrological lesson. We talked about how Jesus was able to heal the blind. Well, if you're talking about Jesus as a man, he walks up to the blind man, he puts his fingers on his eyes, and suddenly he can see. But astrologically, I mean, if you know it's dark out and then the sun comes up, suddenly you can, and it touches your eyes, suddenly you can see. How he
Right.
walked on water. Have you ever seen a sunset over a lake?
Okay, that makes sense. Putting that together.
How he turned water into wine. How he turned water into wine. Do you know why God is considered a man and Earth is considered a woman?
Well, the earth would be, it's all. It's like the two women in Jesus's life are both named Mary. One's a virgin, one's a whore. That's what the earth is. It's able to be impregnated by God's seed or
Yep.
God's rays that
God,
brings forth.
it's not his rays, it's a sacred fluid, it's the water. In Hebrew it's called semen. We get the word semen from it in modern day. how he turned water into wine, basically. You know how you plant in Taurus? And in Taurus, you have April showers bring May flowers. You remember that?
Right.
Well, basically, when you have that, you plant in Taurus, and then everything grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And then the grapes grow into wine. And then in Libra, you press them and make them wine. That's how you originally turn the water into wine.
Oh, wow.
That one's a little more complicated, but yeah, why he had 12 disciples? He had 12 disciples because each of them represents one of the signs of the zodiac. We already know that Judas represents Scorpio because he's the betrayer. We already went why he was betrayed by a kiss by Judas, why he was dead for 3 days, why his birthday's on December 25th. Now, here's the caveat. There are people out there that don't want you to know this kind of information. The information that I've stored in my books, the information that I have. I am by no means the only person that's doing this. I am, however, the only one that's doing it this way. Your method, or you were raised Methodist, but are you familiar with the Roman Catholic catechisms?
Does that have to do with this questioning of the series of questions? I'm not familiar with Catholicism that well.
The catechisms are based. How do I explain this? The catechisms are they're the amendments to the Constitution. These are just like additional things that Catholics need to worry about.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to read you their Catholic Catechism 2116, okay? All forms of divination are to be rejected, recourse to Satan or demons. Conjuring up the dead or other practices falsely supposed to unveil the future. Consulting horoscopes, astrology, palm reading, interpretation of omens and lots, the phenomena of clairvoyance and recourse to mediums, all conceal a desire for power over time, history, and in the last analysis, other human beings, as well as a wish to conciliate hidden powers. They contradict the honor, respect, and loving fear that we owe to God alone. So, there are people that know that the books are based on astrology. And you see how the Catholic Church just demonizes astrology?
Right. So why do they demonize it, in your opinion, and keep it secret?
Because this is sacred information. This is the original sacred information.
They don't want to profane it by giving it to...
They don't want you knowing what it's truly about. I mean, the book is a work of marvel. It really is. I mean, you can read it one way, straight through, and take it literally. But, like, you could dig under it, and you could find a completely different story.
Right. Matthew 7:6 says, "Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces." So, I think they're saying pearls of wisdom. Do not give the secret knowledge to the average person.
Yeah, let me give you an even better one. Proverbs 3:5, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding." So that was put in there on purpose to make sure that you never question things.
Right. And is it just about maintaining power over this secret
Yes.
information that you can, I mean, you can use it subconsciously on people if they're not aware of it?
Exactly. It's a spell. It's what it is. It's a spell.
Right.
Let me give you a theory that I'm working on. So, in the age of Taurus, it was the Egyptians that basically ruled the planet. You can look at hieroglyphs, and you can see pictures of bulls with their horns and the sun in between their horns. They're blatantly telling you they worship the sun in Taurus.
Right.
Then they start to fade, and then the Jews come up in Aries with the ram's horn and the lamb's blood. In Passover, you have to have the lamb shank bone on your plate. It's one of the things that you must have. Let me throw this at you, too. Moses goes up to the top of Mount Sinai to get the Ten Commandments, and he comes down the first time, and he sees them worshiping something. Do you remember what it was?
A golden calf.
Yes. I'll give you two scenarios. You tell me which one's more likely. The first one is that these wandering nomadic Jews have been wandering the desert 40 years, they said, for 40 years, And they basically apparently had all these riches. They had all these gold. Then they found welding equipment in the desert, right near the mountain, and built a giant idol. Or the other option is it's a metaphor for these people of Aries who were worshipping the sun in Taurus, the golden sun calf Taurus. They were worshipping the wrong time period, and that's what angered Moses. He was getting the new law for the new age. So he broke the Ten Commandments, becoming the first lawbreaker. That's where breaking the law comes from. And then, you know, the Jews, they start to fade at the end of Aries. And then in Pisces, Christianity comes up. You have the Jesus fish, which is, the Jesus fish is literally the center of the Vesica Pisces. Okay? And that's why Jesus feeds the mass with two fish. And now, we're in the age of Aquarius, or we've been for the last 8-9 years. So, or 9 years, I should say. So, that's why the elites are trying to rush a new world religion. They're trying to rush a new world religion because every sign has to have one.
Right, so... yeah, when you look at COVID-19, of course it's a coronavirus. The talk of the dark winter just before the great Jupiter-Saturn conjunction on the winter solstice, and they use all this these occultic terms like the Great Reset and Build Back Better. I mean, it seems obvious that there are some very occultic-minded people that are pushing us into this new world agenda.
Yep.
So, do you actually look at world events and look for things like on 9/11? It was clear the numerology all over that, and I don't know, maybe the Twin Towers representative of Gemini, or perhaps it was the destruction of Solomon's Temple with the two pillars, Jachin and Boaz, perhaps.
You got to realize that Solomon is just a combination of three words. Sol, which means sun in Latin. Om, which means sun. And On, O-N, which in Greek times was known as Heliopolis, the city of the sun. They called it On. That's why when you go into a bedroom, you have to turn the lights on.
Okay. So Solomon's Temple, that's an interesting one. Is there astrology written all over that? I'm sure there is. I don't remember the story well enough to...
I'm not sure about Solomon's Temple, but I can tell you this much right now. Stuff doesn't hit the news unless it's meant to serve a purpose. Everything is always agenda-driven. There was a story that came out after 9/11, since you brought it up. That was quite famous. There was one dog died in the rescue efforts of 9/11. Do you remember what the name of the dog was?
I don't, but I'm guessing maybe Sirius.
It was Sirius.
Oh wow! I was just.
It was Sirius, and they made it a point to tell you that. They made it a point to tell you that Sirius died. Incidentally, New Year's Eve, Neil deGrasse Tyson says that there's no real reason why New Year's Eve is the day that it is, but that's not true. If you look up at the sky at midnight on New Year's Eve, if you go outside and look at the sky, you look straight up in the air, you'll see Sirius. It's as high as it's ever going to be. That's its height. And then you follow a line straight down and it's Earth, and then you follow a line straight down and it's the Sun. It's a perfect alignment.
So that's why we start our year on that date.
Right.
Also, on July 4th, there's some sort of alignment with Sirius. Is it Sirius in the sun? I can't remember.
Oh, I'm not. July 4th?
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest with you.
Because historically, there was nothing of any significance that happened on July 4th as to why we should celebrate our independence on that day. But when I was looking up, astronomical things on that date, it mentions Sirius, an important thing that Sirius does.
Huh.
Now, I was thinking about Sirius. It's called the dog star. Dog backwards is God. Is
Right,
there.
that's why you have dogma in church.
Right. So, what is the significance of that there?
Well, it goes back to the worship of Anubis in Egyptian times.
He had a dog head.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And so, when we look at the Magi, they are representative of Orion's belt following Sirius because they're being led
Orion's
by a
belt.
star. The three stars, I may be getting that incorrect.
No. Well, there is that. I remember hearing about that, but I don't really recall, to be honest with you. It's supposed to follow the North Star, I believe.
Okay, so I'm sure you were talking about the movie Face Off. I'm sure when you have trouble watching movies, right, without seeing all these astrological imprints.
I think it's fascinating how they just store that in there.
Do you have any examples, any more examples of that?
Well, I mean, you could talk about something like Lucifer. Like, who is Lucifer supposed to be?
The light bearer, the morning star,
Exactly. Do you know what the morning star is?
Venus.
Exactly. The morning star is Venus, because when you go outside in the early morning and you look straight up at the sky, you'll see, as the sun is rising, you'll see a bright light ahead of it, and that's Venus. It announces the arrival of God's son. Lucifer is the light bearer. Genesis 1:3, God says, "Let there be light." How is there going to be light without the light bringer, without the light bearer? Lucifer's instantly mentioned in the Bible right away. He's just never mentioned by name. But his job title is. Jesus even calls himself the morning star in Revelation 22:16. He says, "I, Jesus, have sent my angel to give you the testimony for the church. I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright morning star." So they're both the morning star. It's all astrology.
So,
And the pentagram, Lucifer's pentagram, if you were to take the sun and put it in the middle, and then you have the orbit of Earth and Venus, the morning star, going around the sun, what you'll see is that they almost touch at five locations. You connect the dots, and that's a pentagram.
okay. So, well, that's some really controversial information there when comparing Lucifer and Jesus, but
Yeah.
it makes sense. I mean, the light bearer and Jesus is the light of the world. My theory is with when they kind of conflate in today's time. Exoterically, they conflate Lucifer, Satan, and the devil, although they're clearly three different characters. That's why they have three different names. But I believe they conflate all three because it makes it easier to initiate some. Once you explain to them that Lucifer is actually the light giver, he's the one who gave us consciousness, then you can kind of initiate them into Luciferianism. And if you can convince them to do that, where still psychologically in their mind they're conflating with evil, you can move them into Satanism and then perhaps devil worship.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. One of my last book in my series, book six, completely demystifies Satanism and Luciferianism through a fiction story, of course, but it basically talks about the Church of Satan, this and that, and what's real and what's not. The truth is that a lot of people who sit there and think that everything is Luciferian have no idea what Luciferianism is.
Kind of like a religion of Prometheus, almost stealing
Right.
the fire from the gods to give to man.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head, like in commercials and logos and the kind of corporate world where, you know, we have a car called Saturn and one called Taurus. You have the bullhead for Toyota.
Right.
Why are they using astrological symbolism for their
Well,
for
it's usually
corporations?
astrological or it's the sun. Because everything, let me put it to you this way. If we were to start over, if there was a cataclysmic event, right? And we had to completely start over. What is the most important thing we would need to do to start over? And I mean from scratch. Would God be that important? No. What would we need to do? We would need to know the signs. We would need to know how to track time so that we know when the weather is going to change, so that we know when to plant, so that we know when to do this, so that we know when to do that. So astrology is always going to be the oldest and most important thing because it's the first thing we're going to come back to. I mean, this is ancient science, this stuff. This is ancient science, and it's as important as it ever is. You know, it's just basically paying homage to the past.
What is the farthest back that we track the zodiac?
I've personally tracked it back 40,000 years. You want me to tell you a quick story?
Yes, please.
All right, so are you familiar with the Lascaux Caves in France?
If I remember correctly, very deep caves where there were animal paintings deep inside of them.
Yeah, they were all zodiac signs. And what they did was they carbon dated the wall and it came out to about 40,000 years. And then what they did was they called in an astronomer and brought in a computer, because we have technology to do this now. They rewound the sky back 40,000 years to see what it would look like, printed out what they found, and then lo and behold, the lines are where Leo is, Taurus, the bull, and everything is where everything is supposed to be. So as far as I know, it goes back 40,000 years.
So they were still using the same symbols?
Yes, can you believe that?
Wow.
Well, it's changed a little bit. I mean, in Egyptian time, the crab used to be the scarab, which is the beetle. That's why St. Augustine calls Jesus, or just St. Augustine in his writings called Jesus the good beetle. The lion used to be the sphinx. But aside from that, it's been the same.
40,000 years. And that means that it being within a cave, they had to have that information memorized to be able to draw it on a cave wall, because you're not able to look up at the stars.
Right. Well, I'll give you one even better. On the summer solstice, June 21st, this only happened one day during the year, the light from the sun would actually come in the cave and bounce off the walls where they were drawing. So where they were located, it only happens one day a year.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
The same way we have things like Manhattan Henge and Stonehenge, right?
Right.
They had their own thing.
Fascinating stuff. You said 40,000 years ago?
40,000 years ago.
And the way I understand it, why they would encode it within stories, well, firstly, this is pre-writing, so they have to tell it through stories. They have to give symbols, because they don't have, they're not making scientific names for them, so they have to, I don't know. I lost my train of thought there.
It's okay.
But it's a very good way to pass down information in story form, because the brain works in story. I mean, even when you're unconscious dreaming, your brain is reacting in visual symbolism that threads into a story. So to be able to pass information through mythology makes it more memorable for those who understand the code.
You gotta also remember there were competing religions too. Christianity wasn't the only one. In 325, Constantine brought everyone together with that. But you had Mithraism, and you had Dagon. There were fish gods. Mithra, the fish god. If you look at the Pope's mitre, the word mitre comes from Mithra. And mitre, that Pope's hat, if you turn it on its side, it looks like a fish head, just like the god Mithra. So they just borrowed. They just borrowed from other cultures.
Right. Have you ever heard the book by Lloyd M. Graham called Myths and Deceptions of the Bible?
I have not.
Have you
read it?
Yes. It's a must read for anybody interested in this kind of material. When I read that, that was my aha moment, you know, because growing up Methodist, I became jaded by the Bible. I started thinking these are just some primitive morons that
right.
just contradict themselves every time. But then I read that book and it just solved a lot of those missing puzzle pieces to where I was like, no, these people are absolute geniuses that I've never met somebody so brilliant to be able to encode
yeah.
something so magically.
Yeah. That's how I feel exactly.
It was
never meant to be taken literally. The original Christians were known as Heliognostics, which, if you break that word down, helio means sun, and gnosis means knower. So they were knowers of the sun. They were sun worshippers.
Right.
They knew this. The Bible was never meant to be taken literally. They'd be going nuts if they found out people were taking it literally.
Yeah, they would probably wonder, how the hell are you taking this literally?
Mm-hmm.
We worked so hard to create these symbols to piece together into something more mystical and spiritual and connective to the universe, and you just trash it. Kind of like the...
You talk about Jonah being in the whale, dead for 3 days. You talk about Cain and Abel with the spear. Ready? You ready for the spear? How
Discipline.
I mentioned the spear before?
Right.
Cain means spear in Hebrew. So the first murder was a spear. It was done with a spear. The other most important murder was the murder of Jesus. At the end, after the nails, he gets the spear to the side.
And that's Sagittarius, right?
Yep.
So, to conclude here, when you're passing along this information, it's also, you know, it's overwhelmingly, I wouldn't say complex because it takes complex and simplifies it, but there's so much information to package. So in closing here, what is the overall message that you want to impart to people?
I mean, that's why I wrote my books disclosing all this information in fiction, because it's easier to digest. You read a good story and you learn along the way. It's the same thing as the Bible, or what the Bible's supposed to be.
So, like we were discussing, they give their information through story. So you used fiction the same way that they used it mythologically, imparting wisdom through fiction.
Correct.
That's a very interesting way to handle this subject matter.
Thank you. I think.
So, are all 6 of your books available now, and where can people purchase those?
The first 3 are out on Amazon, but like I said, I'm at Micah Dank on Twitter and Facebook. Find me there. I'll send you signed copies if you want to get them from me, or you can go on Amazon. Just look up Into the Rabbit Hole. Look for my name, and they're right there.
Awesome. I appreciate your time and a great first interview. Very interesting, fascinating stuff. I can't use the word fascinating anymore because I just overdid it this podcast, but it is fascinating stuff. And keep up the good fight, brother.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good one.
Take care.
And there we have it, folks. My first.
Got it.
Oh, he's still there. My bad. There we have it, folks. My first interview in the book. A great one. A great first interview. Happy to have him on the show. Micah Dank. So, come along for the ride again next week. And, yeah. All right. All right. Bravo for me. And Shooting 101. Love, peace, happiness. Signing off.